Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 131 of Geek Town Radio. This week I have with me...
It's
Matt.
Hey, how are you doing today?
I'm all right, how are you?
Better than last night. So
good. Good.
Yeah, doing all right today.
Good, good. So, it's a new week. What have you been up to?
Well, I just finished playing a game that came out, it was actually earlier this year, called Prey. That's P-R-E-Y, so like...
Yes.
An animal hunting against prey, not like praying to God or whatever.
Yeah.
Which symbolizes some of the game, like when Reavers and those sort of things are coming after you. It's essentially a like survival space game. Like you have certain amounts of different supplies and you eventually pick up different weapons. So you go from like having a wrench, your basic sort of melee attack, and then where you run into mimics. They're basically like sort of space ants.
Right.
That's okay. Kind of way to explain them. And then you pick up a glue gun, which is one of the more useful weapons in the game. You could probably do the whole game with the glue gun.
But
using other things when you need to. It's essentially like you can spray at enemies to make them sort of stop in their tracks, so you sort of super glue them, like so that they can't move together. And then you can use it to like reach high places. So when you shoot it against a wall, it comes out with these big circle block kind of things, so you can climb on them and make your own staircase. But doing that specifically can use quite a bit of ammo.
Right.
So there was a particular situation where I had like 10 shots left, and I had to try. I was trying to do it with like two different ones, and one of them was slightly too high, and I couldn't jump up, and I was getting attacked and that kind of thing. Really did enjoy the game right up until I got to somewhat of an ending. The ending in the game is very, very stretched out. It's a case of like, okay, Morgan can now either get in a pod and leave the space station and leave all these enemies and all the people that you eventually meet behind, or you can use a self-destruct key and essentially blow up everything.
Nice.
I think there's like 4 or 5 different endings as well. I'm not sure what the other ones are. And I got to such a point where it was like, because over comms, certain characters talk to you.
Yeah.
And they say, oh, Morgan, you need to do this or that. And some of this stuff is like pre-recorded. So if you need someone's key card to access an area, they'll leave like a transcribe behind and you can listen to that. And they say, oh, meet me in this area. And then you find out that's where they died. Therefore, that's where the key thing is on them. But the ending got to such a point where I got stretched out that I actually watched the rest of it on YouTube, because it was sort of like... It just got to a point where the ship was getting so overcrowded with enemies and I was getting so low on ammo that I was like, I don't know if I can like do the rest of this. I'm just going to end up keep dying. And you can run through the enemies, but only to a certain degree, where like there's certain elevators that if you have the key for, you can put the key in, but you still have to type in the code. And while you're typing in the code, enemies are attacking you and then you have to wait for that to load and stuff. But apart from the ending and how stretched out it was, I did enjoy the game.
Good.
It gets to a point where something, because the ship is so damaged, it's like, this is broken, so you have to go here and do this, or this needs to code, so you have to go and do this. And some of these things are like on the other side of the ship, or they're on a different floor, or they have those enemies in the way. So I was just like, I'm just going to watch, I'm just going to find where I am to a point with some like Let's Player or something, and then just watch the rest of it. So that's what I ended up doing. But apart from that, it was a good game.
Good. Good.
I then moved on from that to Nier Automata. I think that's how you say the name of it. It's a Japanese game, so I probably pronounced it wrong.
Right.
And I've only played a few hours, so I don't know that much about the story, but it's essentially like a third-person sort of samurai futuristic type of game. There's some story at the moment, and it gets kind of hinted at earlier on, but I'm going to have to work my way through some of the story to understand more of it. But you essentially play as this samurai called 2B, and then you meet another one called S, the one that you play as is a girl, and then you meet this boy, and then he helps you fight the first boss. He gets damaged, but then he comes back later and he's fine.
Right.
And then you basically just go off and do adventures by yourself. Start of the game is very different to the rest of it. Like, it looks like a very linear set kind of game, but when you get past the intro, it's like this massive open world. But you can go out and explore and like defeat enemies and get rewards and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And the game also stresses to you like so many different times. Like, there's no autosave, and that you even bump into this person you bump into, this character, and you can ask some questions like, "How do I save? How do I upgrade?" and all this kind of stuff. And then you ask them how you save, and they go, "Okay, there's no autosave," and they put like an exclamation mark, and then they explain to you that there's these different save points around the map, and if you're like near one of them but not right next to it, you can still quick save. So that's right. Quite good. And then you give you this whole speech, you get to the end, and it's just like, just a reminder, no autosave, like capital letters and stuff. Right, I get the point. So yeah, no autosave, but that's been quite good as well. I've only played about 3 maybe 4 hours, but the combat's pretty good. You get this gun that doesn't run out of ammo, at least it hasn't yet. So, and you get this sword and stuff, it's quite good. What else have I been doing? I've been watching Black Lake on BBC.
Oh yes, yeah.
I don't know if it's particularly popular at the moment. I just sort of found it when I was searching through shows on there.
Yeah,
it's about this group of students that go to this cabin thing in Switzerland, and this one particular girl notices that every night that they go to sleep, there's this banging by this door, and then eventually, like, they set up these cameras and stuff, and you see that like the door's opening on its own. It's a little bit cliche, but it's still very good for what it tries to do.
Yeah.
You know, the whole like, "Oh, look, the door's opening, and look, there's nothing in there, and this character's gonna walk through it," and all that kind of stuff. They're doing 2 episodes every Saturday. I've got this Saturday's episodes to watch, actually.
Right.
But I think that's been quite good. It's got subtitles, but I don't have a problem with that.
So yeah, it's a Scandinavian show, isn't it?
So. Yeah, I think so. Because I watched The Return and that had subtitles as well.
Yeah.
So that's been quite good. It's only 45 minutes as well, as opposed to an hour. Sometimes right. BBC shows have an hour long. Have you seen that yourself?
I haven't, no. I should watch more of those kind of Scandi noir dramas, but I don't watch that many of them. But yes, I've been told that it is good. They've got some good things with it.
Have you played either of the games that I mentioned?
Prey, no. I've not played either of them. Prey, I played... There was an original version of Prey, which was an entirely sort of different game, written by Gary Witter, who's the guy that wrote the original Walking Dead game as well. But he wrote the first Prey game. The Telltale game.
Okay.
Yeah. He's same writer. Yeah, I played that one. I've just not played the newer one, which came out more recently.
I'm aware of the old one, but I haven't seen any of it. So
yeah
when Bethesda, because Bethesda's the one that does Prey.
Yeah.
Because they do all the Fallouts and Skyrims and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So you can see that it fits in that kind of world, but more in like a space sense. There was rumors a few years ago that they were doing another one, because I think they changed their development, because they were going to make this like bounty hunter style game, which definitely isn't what it is. What it ended up being, but I guess at some point in development they changed it into this other game. The game Nier that I mentioned is a PlayStation exclusive,
right?
Because that's one of their like JRPG partnership games that they have.
Yeah,
so there's that, and then Black Lake. Dr. Foster, been keeping up with? Have you been
I haven't. Yeah. It's one that I still need to go and watch, because I completely missed the first season as well, but yes, I've been hearing good things.
It's a very, very dark show with bits of comedy thrown in, but it has like these bits of comedy thrown in, even in like the dark parts of it, like when Gemma and the husband are talking, and then like they get into an argument, but then they joke about something.
Yeah.
Almost in like a Harley Quinn Joker sense.
Right.
It's kind of what it's the point that it's got to. Like, they sort of
interesting.
Not in the same loving sense though.
No.
So in more of a hate sense. But you know that there's still something there between them. So
yeah.
Maybe not quite the right comparison, but along those kind of lines. So that's been pretty good as well. That's had 3 episodes. Second season's almost over.
Only yes.
2 episodes left.
Yes.
I have actually managed to keep up with Fear the Walking Dead, because it's on the Microsoft shop thing, store.
Oh, is it?
Because they got their video section. You can buy season passes for like Game of Thrones, Walking Dead, Flash, all these kind of shows. Because I split the season pass with someone that I watch it with, and bought like the SD version, and so I've managed to keep up with that without getting the BT stuff. So
yes,
stick to the Now TV. I got a thing coming up. I'm going to write about it as well. It is just another kind of zombie show, but it's fine in that way that when they announced this show, we knew it wasn't going to like rival or compete with The Walking Dead, although surprisingly there are some people in the community that can prefer The Walking Dead, which you might find interesting.
Yeah, I'd heard that. So
yeah, those kind of people got to the point where like they don't feel like they're doing the comics right, and because I guess this isn't, it's based on the comic but not for the storyline, that they just prefer the like sort of separate story to it. But that's been quite good as well. It's got about 4 weeks left and then Walking Dead, it goes straight back into Walking Dead, so that's been quite good as well.
Yeah,
I think that's about it for what I've been watching stuff, apart from weekly stuff like Nashville and
yeah, yeah.
And I'm gonna go and try and watch, we've got the new Star Trek, haven't we?
Yes,
starting today.
Yes, so. We have got the new Star Trek, which I actually watched this morning. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, it's not exactly Star Trek that you'd necessarily recognize if you're a fan of Next Generation and that sort of stuff. It is very updated and sort of modernized, you know, playing much more to a modern audience. The interesting thing about the first two episodes, I'm going to be very careful with what I say here because I don't want to spoil any of it for anybody. But the first, but the first two episodes are almost a prequel to Star Trek Discovery, if that makes sense, because it's sort of the opening episodes is kind of a coda before the proper show really begins. It's setting up the introduction to Michael, who is a girl, but it's Sinequa and Martin Green's character.
She's all over this promotion, and
but
she's
the sort of lead character throughout. But it's sort of giving you a bit of background and setting up her, who that character is really. That's sort of the opening episode, and the larger plot points about who the bad guys are going to be and that sort of stuff. So a lot of it is set up in those opening two episodes, but it's done incredibly well. There's a lot of action in it. It's beautifully shot. I mean, it's really, really nicely shot. They've done a good job with updating things, and I mean, it's not like it was ever going to dovetail into the original series in any way, shape or form, because it's very difficult to present a show now, which then is, you know, which is a prequel to a show that went out in the 60s and have it look right. You know, that was never going to really happen. So the technology looks a lot more advanced than it does on the original series. But, you know, I think they've done a decent job in, you know, things like the communicators are the old style flip phone style communicators. And, you know, the phases are what you'd expect them to be from the original series. So, I mean, you know, a lot of the tech is there, and it's based on stuff that had been established throughout like 50 years of Trek history, but I think they've done a solid job with it. The other thing is they Netflix have picked up After Trek as well, which is the follow-on show, you know, like Talking Dead. Throncast and that stuff. They've got a show called After Trek which they picked up, so you can watch that as well if you want. That's been picked up on Netflix.
Section.
No, it popped up like straight after I finished watching the first two episodes. That popped up as being the next thing to watch, you know, on Netflix. So it is on Netflix with it as well. I suspect they will push that as being, now you've watched the episode, go and watch After Trek.
Yeah, or it'll start in 15 seconds unless you cancel it anyway.
That sort of thing. Yeah. It's first two episodes are now on Netflix and After Trek is on Netflix, so worth going to watch, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to have had a fairly positive reaction so far, I think. I know some people
haven't
are complaining.
Actually seen any like consensus yet, because I know last week there were some critics that went and saw it.
Which
actually confused me, because I was like, doesn't this start on the 25th? And then I found out, oh, it's the critics. And now I'm like, oh, okay, that's like people who watch it, screeners and that kind of thing. So.
Originally they were saying it was sounding like they wasn't going to give any press screenings, but it sounds like they did eventually. And it's been pretty positive from what I can see. So I don't know. If you're a hardcore Trek fan, it might annoy you in places, but I think they did a very good job with it. So
I mean, my nan used to watch Star Trek and stuff, and I never got into like the old series and stuff, so it's probably a good like fresh jumping on point for me as well. So,
yeah, I would have thought.
And it's like the day after, and it's on Netflix and stuff, so it's quite nicely.
Yeah. So there's that. Also sticking with sci-fi type stuff, Philip K. Dick's Electric Dreams, second one of those went out this week, which is called The Impossible Planet.
I meant to talk about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So have you watched these yet?
I did watch the first one. The the Hoodmaker?
Hoodmaker, yes.
Yeah, I'm going to keep watching the show because each episode is a new thing. But and I liked it in general, but I think for the story for the first episode, I wasn't all that kind of into it.
Right,
like
yeah.
The plot, but then again, with like I said, with these kind of anthology episode shows, you could just jump in next week with a new story and stuff. But I liked it in general, just not the particular kind of storyline that they picked for that. Is that on Sundays as well?
Yeah, that going out Sunday nights on Channel 4. I mean, The Impossible Planet again is, I mean, the thing is, it's sci-fi, but it's kind of quite a cerebral kind of sci-fi, I guess. You know, it's not like full-on shooty alien type. It's not that sort of thing because Philip K. Dick's work isn't really like that, you know. I mean, the same with The Impossible Planet. Slightly confusing end to it, I suppose, but it sort of fits with the type of thing that it is, you know. I think it fits in. I mean, there's been some criticism of the fact that they appear to be changing bits of Philip K. Dick's short story work for no major obvious reason. I think there are a lot of reasons for making changes with the Hoodmaker.
Isn't that a bit like when they do Walking Dead and they stick to certain stories but change certain things? Isn't it just a bit like that?
Yeah, there is a certain amount of that, you know, and they're using the short stories as a kicking off point and inspiring ideas. I really enjoyed The Impossible Planet. I thought it was good. As I say, the ending I think is different to the book from what I've been reading, but I thought it's well acted, solidly put together. It was an interesting idea again. I'd be very interested to see how this goes down with an audience and whether Channel 4 end up commissioning a second season of it as well. Mm-hmm. But it was good. I enjoyed it.
I mean, there's 10, isn't there?
There's 10 in total. There's, I think, 6 this year and then 4 next year, I think, is how they've split it. So there's a little bit of a split in it, but yeah, it's good.
If you go to watch episode 7, it won't be that when you... Yes.
Yes. So we've got that. We've got The Good Place as well, which turned up on Netflix this week. As I've said before, I've already seen the first season of this, so I jumped straight in on the second season. Honestly, brilliantly funny show. Well worth watching through if you've not caught it yet. I won't go into any detail on the second season because I think that will spoil it for people. So do go and watch The Good Place if you haven't caught it yet. Russell Howard Hour I watched, which is a new show on Sky One, which is basically Russell Howard's Good News. But an hour long, is no bad thing as far as I'm concerned, because I really enjoy the Russell Howard's Good News. I thought it was a great show, and this is almost exactly the same format. It's him doing topical comedy on a weekly basis with a few guests and some positive stories thrown in as well. So, you know, it's basically the same thing. And then the Shannara Chronicles, which was my major binge watch this week, because I missed it when it was on TV and it's now on Netflix. You can get the whole first season on Netflix. So I binged my way through that. That's quite an interesting show if you've not seen it. It's proper fantasy, basically. I mean, it's elves and trolls and all that sort of thing.
And Manu Bennett.
Yeah, and Manu Bennett. Yeah. But it's kind of set, I suppose, in a post-apocalyptic future, because it is set on Earth. It's just in an Earth that has basically been, the society is obviously, something happened and society has died. So there's relics, like they'll walk past like cars that are rusting and that sort of stuff. And some of the locations that they end up using are old human locations. And some of the humans have survived, but elves seem to be the major kind of dominant race now. It's proper kind of high fantasy of sort of a group of people based around their royal family. They've got to go and get a thing, which stops another thing, which is stopping the rise of a bunch of demons. You know, so, I mean, it's classic fantasy stuff, but I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really nicely put together. Looks stunning on screen. I mean, it's all shot in New Zealand, so, but yeah, worth going to check out. The second season of that is coming back next month, I think, sometime in October. I think that arrives on 5 USA. I think they're airing that, so but worth going to check out.
Okay. I did watch the first three episodes or so, and it was good. I just didn't really get into it.
Yeah, I get that. And I sort of binged my way through it. I think it sort of picks up towards the second half of the season, because it's only like 10 episodes and they're 40, 45 minutes each, something like that. And there's a lot of exposition and stuff in those early episodes, but it does pick up quite a lot more towards the end of that first season. So it might be worth going back to. And then gaming wise, I've finished my epic run on Fallout 4, which has taken about 2 months to do. So I finished that, and I've moved on to South Park, The Stick of Truth, which I played through once already, but this is obviously the South Park game, which came out in 2014, I think. So it's a few years old now. It's just as funny as I remember it the first time. It's great fun. My main reason for going back to that is because the new South Park game, The Fractured But Whole, is coming out next month. So I wanted to sort of play through the original, because the second game takes place the day after the first game, apparently. So it's a proper continuation of the original, of the first game.
They'll probably make some sort of joke about that as well.
I'm sure they will. Yeah. I'm sure there'll be a lot of in jokes. There are a lot of in jokes in the Stick of Truth as well. The thing that inspired me to do that was because I was at EGX this week. So we'll go into a little bit more detail about EGX in a moment. I was at EGX this week, and I think Ubisoft actually probably had the largest collection of games there. I mean, there were people there from PlayStation, Microsoft were there with the Xbox One, Xbox One X, is it?
The new one?
Yeah.
There's the Xbox One, then the Xbox One S, then the Xbox One X.
Yeah, so they were demoing...
S and X are a bit similar. So,
yes, yeah. They were demoing the Xbox One X, apparently. There, which is sort of the first time people have got their hands on it. I didn't actually get to play with it because I only was there for the day, and the queues, I mean, it's the same with the Ubisoft stand. The queues to get into games on the Ubisoft stand were about 1 to 2 hours. And the same with the Xbox and the PlayStation stuff. Just ridiculous queues for those. So I didn't actually get to play many of the any of the AAA stuff or play on the hardware. So I can't really tell you much about them other than, as I say, Ubisoft was there with South Park. They were there with Assassin's Creed Origins, Far Cry 5 they had demos of, and Mario plus Rabbids Kingdom Battle as well was also there. So there's a few photos from me wandering around DGX up on the Instagram account at GeekTown UK. Okay. So, from the bits that I actually saw of it that were sort of playing on video screens and stuff, they look really good. I kind of didn't really want to go and play any of the South Park game because I've already got it pre-ordered. I want to save it all for that. I was quite interested in Assassin's Creed Origins. There's been a few posts I've seen around online of people saying that whoever developed Assassin's Creed Origins appears to have been playing The Witcher 3 quite a lot, which is no bad thing if that is true.
That's an incredible game.
Yeah, because that is an incredible game. And the problem is, if you have your sights set on that, I think you're probably going to be disappointed because I suspect it's nowhere near as good. But, interesting.
Don't say anything particularly bad about Ubisoft. It's just not going to be as good as The Witcher.
Not at all. And I've never been a huge fan of the Far Cry franchise. I've never been massively into it.
I've dipped in and out of it. This looks like a fresher sort of take on it, because I heard very mixed things about 4.
Yeah.
And I already wasn't kind of interested. And it's weird because they put this really good villain in the fourth one. I think he's voiced by Troy Baker.
Yes,
and
probably.
I remember playing like the first 5 hours or so, and he's hardly in the game. Because you see him right at the start, he does some intimidating stuff, but then he like disappears for the whole game. And then Far Cry Primal, I just thought, no, I don't want to go back in time and play Far Cry, basically. But I remember finishing, it was either 2 or 3, the one where you're like stuck on the island kind of thing, and that was good.
I just, for some reason, I've not connected with those games at all. The new one does look interesting, and maybe if it comes up on a deal, I might go and buy it, but I want to see what the reviews are like for it first. So I don't know. I may go back, I may go and have a look, but I don't know.
There's like some different companions and stuff for Far Cry 5. You get like this guy who can come pass with this plane. You've got like this sniper kind of woman who can help you. You've got like this dog, and there's one more that I can't remember at the moment, but it looks like they can make the gameplay nice and fresh. So
there was those. In terms of a lot of the indie games, which is where, because you can get onto the indie games, that was sort of where that I ended up hanging around. There was a few projects that particularly stood out to me. One of them was created by a guy called Jonathan Nielsen, who I actually spoke to a little bit. That was called Falling Sky. And to be honest, it wasn't really a full game. It was a student project he's done. So it's almost like a tech demo of here's what I can do. It looks stunning though. Absolutely beautiful. It's very kind of feel of something like Heavy Rain or Life is Strange. Really, really nicely rendered. Not at all the sort of level that you would expect for a student game. Much, much higher quality than that. And there's a basic story to it in that it's a kid that's sort of been abandoned at home, and his older brother has turned up and finds that his parents are missing, and his younger brother, who's sort of 9 or 10, he's hiding out in a little tent in the room, and you kind of get him and then take him to a local diner. And I mean, the story wasn't really the important thing for me on that. It was sort of just showing off what the guy can do. So it's called Jonathan Nielsen. It really going to be somebody to keep an eye out for, that because I think if he can keep that level of stuff up on when he's actually kind of working full time, because I think he's only recently graduated. So whether he makes Falling Sky into a full thing or whether he ends up going and do something else, he wasn't entirely sure when I spoke to him, but certainly very, very interesting. I thought that was, there was another game called Living the Deal, which it's described as a business management sim, and this is the sort of game that I get lost in for hours. You play a character that's moved to the first time to a new city. You're told you have your rent to pay, which is due in a month, so you've got to pay your rent, try not to starve. It's got a sort of sim feel to it, a Sim City kind of feel to it.
There's new Sims coming out as well.
Is there really? Okay.
It's being released for current gen consoles that last. So I don't think there's actually a current version for them.
Oh, isn't there?
Yeah.
Interesting.
I watched some girl called Susie Liu on YouTube. She's been doing a Sims series, and she's not playing the one that's coming out, but she went back on one of the PC ones.
Yeah.
I think it's Sims 4, the pets one, that's coming out for the Xbox and PS4.
Okay.
Because, almost 4 years that they've been out, there isn't a current Sims game. Kind of strange.
So this is a sort of business management sim. You're looking over the city, various opportunities come up, and you've got to kind of go and, you can take a job like flipping burgers to try and sort of just make sure that, keep the wolf in the door and make sure you're not kicked out of the apartment. But the ultimate idea is to get involved in property management and start flipping properties. So it's a lot of kind of, you're sort of doing deals with people, some shadier than others, and you're kind of managing this property portfolio as well as trying to make sure that you're making enough money not to get kicked out of that and to move somewhere better, I guess. So it's one of those things that you can end up sinking just hours it's still kind of quite in early in development, that, but it's certainly one that I will be looking at a little bit more. Team 17 were there with their big game, which is The Escapists. They've got The Escapist 2 there, which is this prison break simulator thing.
Yeah.
That was a really fun game. I played the first one of that. The Escapist 2, really, it isn't like an entirely different game in any way, shape or form. They've just taken a lot of the feedback that they have from users, adjusted things, added new things in. It's more comprehensive crafting system, better combat, and they've upgraded the graphics as well. So it looks far nicer. But essentially it's the same basic gameplay. They've just tweaked a lot of stuff to make it a lot nicer.
It sounds like something called FIFA.
FIFA way of developing games. There was another one which I completely missed while I was there, but sounded really interesting, called Genesis Alpha 1, which is described as a mix of a roguelike shooter and base building survival that puts you in the role of an interstellar pioneer. So you're basically on a you're on a spaceship, and you can kind of expand bits of the spaceship out. And I love building games. So you know, I love games that you can kind of. I mean, part of the reason that that Fallout 4 run took so long was the fact that I spent so long building just like bases and stuff when I'm there. So I love those sort of things. So
what was the other one you got lost in? Civilization 6?
Earlier
in the year. Yeah,
Civilization. I can spend hours getting lost in Civilization. I love those sort of games. Just I lose hours and hours in it. So so there was that.
With the Escapists, the first one. It was a game with gold at some point on the Xbox One. Yeah. I did a first impressions thing of that, like a little 15-minute kind of video. I think it's fairly self-explanatory, but I thought that was quite good as well. It was like it was like a prison kind of thing, and you rapidly move between, like, you know, you have your lunch and then you go and like do these other bits, and then but it was like moving nice and like really quickly. There's also strangely a Walking Dead version.
I was going to say
what that comes with or what it sort of involves. I've seen bits and pieces of that one, and it's I think it's like you sort of redo parts of the TV series or something.
Yeah,
I haven't actually played it yet, so I couldn't tell you, but that's quite good as well. And then there's like there's other bundle packages where you can get. I think there was the Escapists, and then there was the Walking Dead one, and then there was one that had like Christmas skins on it or something like that.
There's loads of extra maps and bits and pieces you can get for that.
Yeah.
So there's that. There was a game called Deadbeat Heroes, which I did actually interview the guy for it, and the recording messed up, so I haven't got that, unfortunately. But that was really good. It was a fast-paced brawler. It's like a crime caper where you're playing superheroes that none of them with powers, so it's all kind of gear-based superhero stuff. It's so like from
more Batman-esque.
More that you're playing with like a you know, you play a hero and you kind of pick a team. It's all done from that sort of isometric three-quarter top-down view sort of thing, and it's from an ex-Lionhead and Rockstar developers, Adam Langridge and Ikomi Hayate, I think his name is. It's inspired by their love of classic beat-em-up arcade games, so it's a lot of kind of button-mashing type stuff, really. But the interesting thing that they've done with this is there's no block button, so the only way you can avoid being hit is you've got to keep moving and like running and jumping and dashing around. It's inspired by those sort of kitsch 60s superhero stuff, so things like the classic Batman TV show, but it's all set in London, so it's all done with a kind of tongue-in-cheek sort of London thing. There's like one person that looks a bit like Bruce Lee, and there's one that looks a little bit like Austin Powers, so it's that was really fun. I really enjoyed that. And the last one was Fear FX Sender, which is based on the classic Fear FX IP. I did manage to get a bit of an interview with one of the guys behind that game, so this is the interview with them. I'll let them explain a bit more about it, and then we'll move on to some TV and film news.
Tell me your name and what's the game?
I'm Tej, a community manager at Sushi, and the game is Fear FX Sender.
Okay, so where'd the idea for the game come from?
Well, actually, Goetia over there is was the first game we published with the Square Enix Collective. And then with the successful release of that, we started to talk about the Fear Effect IP. And we pitched our idea for the Fear Effect Sedna, which is a sequel to the original games, an original story that we actually co-wrote with the original writer of the Fear Effect series. And then we are now getting close to the end stages of development, and this is the latest demo on show here, the first part of the level.
So it's sort of a three-quarter kind of top-down view of the game. I'm trying to remember what were the original Fear Effect games? So
the originals were very similar to that style of fixed camera views with the animated backgrounds, like Resident Evil kind of thing. And it was just our take on, I mean, I don't know if you played those games recently. It was just a way that we were developing games at the time, and we trying to take a new approach to the whole thing with our own story and our own new style of gameplay to be able to kind of have our own take on the franchise as well. But when we launched this on Kickstarter, it was successfully funded, and there's a huge response from the Fear Effect community. And throughout the whole development of this, we've had a huge demand for Fear Effect 1 to be remade. And actually, a couple of weeks ago, we announced that we'll be making Fear Effect 1 one Fear Effect reinvented, and that will keep the same fixed camera views but with updated controls and visuals.
Very cool. So what platforms is coming out on, and do you know when it's released?
Can't say a release date just now, but we should be able to announce that pretty soon, and it'll be on PC, out on Steam, and PS4, Xbox One, and that's all I can say.
awesome. Well, it's good fun. I probably won't have a career in disabling bombs anytime soon, but apart from that, yeah, it's been really cool. So, yeah, good luck with it.
Thanks very much.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So that was all the stuff from EGX. Now we have the TV and film news, and we start off with the air date updates. So production has begun on Human Season 3, they've announced this week. This is obviously, I mean, I've been waiting for this to come back for ages. It's going to be a little bit later than usual, because usually it starts around about now. I don't know the exact reason for them moving it back a little bit. I suspect it's something to do with the various talent not being available at the same time. That would be maybe my feeling, because I know they've been off doing other shows and mid films and stuff, so maybe that's why. But so that's being shot right now, so hopefully we'll have a bit more stuff on Humans coming up over the next couple of months, I hope, if Channel 4 are nice to me. David Williams has got another one of his books being turned into a Christmas drama, this time for the BBC. They're doing Grandpa's Great Escape. This is on top of Sky One, who were doing Rat Burger already. So he's going to have two Christmas specials off two of his books, which he's starring in both of them on two different channels over the Christmas period. So yes, David Williams raking in the cash this year. Netflix have renewed BoJack Horseman for its fifth season, which nice. I still haven't got around to watching, and I know people...
Watched the four seasons or not started?
I haven't started at all. It's one that I've got to go and watch at some point.
Yeah, I watched the fifth season recently. It was very, very good.
Everybody tells me it's great. Once the Rick and Morty is finished, it's run this time, I might go and try BoJack Horseman.
Yeah, they've only got three episodes left of that. So.
Yeah. Showtime, it's announced, have acquired the rights to a book called The President Is Missing, and it's based on a novel by James Patterson, who is the wonderful guy behind stupid shows like Zoo. So, the upcoming Instinct drama, which is being picked up in the US. But it's by James Patterson and Bill Clinton, former US president.
Oh, okay.
I thought that was kind of interesting, because it's basically about the president going missing or possibly being kidnapped, but the president goes missing while serving office, but it's written with a guy who actually knows how that might be possible. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Also, Sky One have picked up Marvel's Inhumans to air some point this autumn, but we don't know when yet. I mean, I think we've spoken about Inhumans before, and did you ever get to the cinema to see it? Because I watched the first two episodes.
No, and given what I heard, I wouldn't. I'm not saying like your audience shouldn't spend the money, but me personally, I didn't want to spend the money from what I heard. Because
I think that's fair enough. I mean, there was a rumor flying around saying it had been cancelled. It hasn't been cancelled, at least not yet anyway. It was just some very poor choice of wording on the ABC marketing that led people to believe that, because they said the complete first season. Yeah. And what they were trying to do was distinguish it from the marketing for the IMAX screenings. Yeah. But it just made people go, oh, well, they've cancelled it because it's complete. And that's not what they meant at all. So
there were sites, you know, like comicbook.com, who like posts some very, very clickbaity sort of stuff.
They were
saying like, oh, you know, it's to get the clicks, to say like, oh, look, this show that people, that critics have been absolutely like saying is terrible, has actually been cancelled before it's even aired or any of this kind of stuff. So it's just to get that kind of
yeah.
of Buzz.
I mean, that's not to say that it won't be cancelled at some point, yeah. but, you know, I mean, I didn't mind the first two episodes, but I have to say I wasn't like completely blown away by it. Okay. And it's difficult to judge because you're watching it in IMAX, and I think the IMAX stuff might have done it more harm than good, possibly. But I, you know, because I think it needed to possibly be better than it is. And I, yeah. but I just mean the IMAX is very unforgiving in that every little possible special effect problem that there might be with that is going to show up on screen. So I thought it was interesting, and I think there is potential for quite a good series. I just think it's not off to the best start. So I think go and watch it and see what you think. It's, but yeah, I don't know whether it does make it out of a first season. I don't know. But, you know, remember Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in its first season got absolutely slated by quite a lot of people, and that turned itself around. So maybe this will as well.
Yeah, I saw on there's this because over at Collider, they have all this network of different shows and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And on their Collider Heroes thing, this the main guy at the panel, because it was the three of them, they started talking about Inhumans, and they said it would be spoiler free. So I wanted to get there. Quick, like 10-minute consensus, and the guy in the middle who was hosting the panel, as they kept talking about it, the woman who was in the panel as well, she's like, "So, do you have anything else to say about Inhumans?" And he was like, "No, I want to move on. It's like upsetting me," and like because he was saying how he like grew up on these comics or whatever, and like he was disappointed with the portrayals and stuff, and he was like, "No, let's just move on and talk about something else." So I was like, "Oh, all right, it." But, yeah, you know, I haven't seen it myself, so I can't like say anything bad about it particularly because I haven't
seen it. Speaking of the difficulty of getting comic book things to TV, work has actually officially started on Damien Lindelof's adaptation of Watchmen for HBO, which I'm quite excited about because.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there was the movie version, and I think he had a fairly good stab. I mean, I'm not the biggest Zack Snyder fan, but I think he had a fairly good stab at it for the film. I think it was a very, very tough sell to do that in a cinematic format in 2 hours. I think that's very difficult. It always needed to be a long form format because of the type of book that it is. It needed to be on HBO or Netflix or Amazon. Mm-hmm. It needed to be somewhere where you could make it like R-rated and get really kind of dirty with it and messy, and you know it needed that. So I'm really excited for this because Damien Lindelof's great. I mean, he's one of the guys behind Lost and I can't remember the Leftovers, that's the other show. So, you know, very popular, very in with HBO. And I think Watchmen is a fascinating book to go for, particularly in the sort of current political climate, because it was all set around kind of Nixon era stuff. And, you know, so I think now it's going to be interesting to see where they go with it.
I think it's in the right place in terms of HBO. It's not like, can you imagine that like a CW or like an ABC version?
Yeah, no, it'd be awful. So,
like if you put The Witcher on ABC or AMC or something, it would be half decent, but the real potential wouldn't be there.
I, you know, I'm really looking forward to this. I think it's got the right guy behind it. It's in the right place. It's got some great source material, and you know, TV format was always the way it should have been. So I think that'll be really good.
I think in terms of what you said, in terms of you know, films being only 2 hours and stuff, I think that's actually the problem with video game films, is sometimes it's the quality. Like Assassin's Creed wasn't very good. But it's the case of like, you need these long form stories because these games are like so many hours and stuff. And you need more time to flesh these things out. That's why I also think that the Witcher series on Netflix should be very good, because they'll get more time to tell the story, and it's on Netflix as well. So,
I know. I was very excited when they said that that's where the Witcher series was going. I mean, we've also had the trailer for Tomb Raider this week as well,
which looks like the trailer for the game in live action.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, it's I was like watching it going, I've played the first game, and this is almost similar. Shot for shot, you know? So that's kind of interesting. But so who knows? Maybe
I
sticking...
I don't think there's anything bad about it. It could still be very good. It's maybe just sticking... possibly very similar.
Yeah, maybe sticking that close to it is the sensible thing to do. So I don't know, but we'll see. Maybe we'll get a decent video game to movie conversion from that, but we'll see.
So the bigger news stories this week, the two that we have are both connected to the Blantyverse. First one is the Riverdale team is working on a Sabrina the Teenage Witch series, which is something that they've talked about pretty much ever since Riverdale was announced. Okay. There's been talk of whether Sabrina will actually show up. We did an interview, the video interviews up on the YouTube channel with KJ Apa, who thankfully is fine after because you heard about this the car crash this week, basically decided to drive himself home after shooting for 10 hours and going, even though they apparently had said to him, you know, if you're feeling tired, don't get in a car, you know, we'll drive you home, and he still decided to drive
home. It was 16 hours
there you go, and nobody, I mean, they, to be fair, the studio should also have been absolutely insistent to say you are not getting in a car after being shooting for 16 hours, but you know, I'm glad that he's all right anyway. But
I was watching Collider TV Talk yesterday. I was doing a bit of catch up with it, and Josh McCougar, the guy who hosts the show, he was going off on a little bit of a rant of saying, like, you know, if you have like firefighters or people like that, then those people like should be going out late at night and stuff. But he said just for a TV show, you shouldn't be doing like 16 hours. And he was saying to Grace, who was one of the other panelists, because she used to be an actress herself, and she was saying like how long the days could be. And he said, like, isn't there any kind of way you can stretch things out a bit more? I said, you know, you do have deadlines and stuff, but he said, like, there should just be something different done about it, because that's a very, very long work day, no matter what the job is.
Yeah. It is. And I mean, I get it. Whether something should be done about that, I don't know. But I mean, 16 hours does seem like a ridiculously long work day. What he shouldn't have done, and what the studio shouldn't have let him do, is get into a car. You know, that was idiotic. So, you know, I think fault on kind of on both sides, really, for that. But he's okay. So that's fine. But yeah, so the ever since we, you know, which came up in that interview, which is why I happened to mention it, but came up in the interview with him about whether Sabrina will be joining the show. And I've always thought that's a little difficult to do with Riverdale, because Riverdale doesn't have, like, you know, witches and stuff in it. So it's kind of a difficult thing to add in to that. But having said that, it's not going to be the original Sabrina the Teenage Witch. So if you're familiar with the old TV show, which is based on the kind of original Archie comics, it's not based on that. It's based on something called The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, which was done by Archie Horror, which is a sort of sub-brand of the Archie comics, and is a sort of more adult version of it. So not like the Melissa Joan Hart 90s TV show. It's going to be in the same vein that sort of Riverdale is a much darker version of the kind of Archie comic books. This is also going to be a much darker version of
Sabrina. So are they actually like separate versions, what Melissa did and what this is? Are they actually like...
I mean, because the Melissa Joan Hart 90s TV show was sort of based on the original Archie comics, which, you know, had Sabrina the Teenage Witch and was kind of cutesy and fun and, you know, was a comedy, basically. It was a children's show. Whereas Chilling Adventures of Sabrina is based on the same premise, but it's a very different, more horror-based comics. It's actually a separate comic book.
Okay, it's like a different take on it.
Yeah, so it's a different take on it.
Okay.
Entirely. And that's what the TV show is going to be based on. So it's a dark coming-of-age tale, which is sort of horror, occult, and witchcraft. It's been described as being more in the vein of Rosemary's Baby or The Exorcist, rather than, you know, so it's very much darker. Sabrina must wrestle to reconcile her dual nature as a half-witch and half-mortal while fighting the evil forces that threaten her and her family. It's been viewed as a companion series to Riverdale, so although, I mean, maybe the character will pop up at some point, but Riverdale,
a Flash to Arrow kind of thing?
I don't think it's even going to be that closely connected. I don't think. I mean, I could be wrong about that.
24 Legacy to 24 kind of.
Yeah, I think it's more same universe, but whether they will actually cross over at any point, I don't know. It's been written by Agrary Sankasa, who is the chief creative officer of Archie Comics and actually wrote the Riverdale pilot as well. and The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, the comic book. So he's one of the kind of main guys behind it. He's also going to serve as showrunner, and it's being produced with Greg Berlanti as well, who obviously produces Riverdale and all the DC shows. It's going to be piloted for CW some point in, I mean, it's in early development, but it's probably likely to be next fall season or next autumn season. They're likely to aim for it to come out if they're sort of talking about it now. So it'll probably shoot over next summer, I would have thought. But yeah, interesting one. I mean, you know, I think that's... I wasn't even aware that Archie had like this horror strand to it.
I wasn't either. No.
So yeah, that was quite a surprise when I was looking this up. But I think, you know, now knowing that, that makes sense, you know, and that's what they're basing it on. So yeah, I think that could be kind of interesting. And sticking with the Berlanti stuff, over on the Arrowverse, Russell Tovey, who we know from Quantico and HBO's Looking and Him and Her, and of course Being Human, where he played George the werewolf, he is joining the Arrowverse as the Ray. The Ray, if you don't know that character, he's been around since the 40s, but there was a version of the character created by Jack C. Harris and Joe Quesada in 1992, which is going to be the basis of the character for the TV show. He's a reporter who discovers a group of government scientists working on a secret project to turn light into a weapon of mass destruction. Before he can report his findings, the project head exposes Ray to a genetic light bomb, and the bomb fails to kill him, but instead turns him into a superhero with light-based powers. So, I mean, you know, it's just a standard like superhero origin story, really. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I really like Russell Tovey. I think he's a great actor. He's been in some fantastic stuff. He plays that sort of comic and serious stuff quite well off each other.
Which show is he joining for this?
This is what we're not sure about. We know he's going to show up in the crossover event, which we've actually got a title for as well now, which is called Crisis on Earth X. There is a minor spoiler, although somebody kind of shouted at me online for saying, oh, there's a spoiler in there. And this is a spoiler, I suppose, but I think you'd be an idiot not to know that this was going to happen this season, because the whole thing's based around Barry and Iris's wedding. We knew that
that's
was
not really a spoiler.
We sort of
not
knew
like
that was going to happen.
Iris dies or something.
No, so we kind of knew that was going to happen. So
yeah,
they released a really nice poster for it, which is sort of based on the old comic book covers. It's really lovely poster they've done, but the Ray is mentioned on there, so we know he's in that episode. We just don't know which series. I think at the moment they've not really said which series he's going to show up in. I mean, he would easily fit, I think, on Flash or Legends. I think those would be the obvious places to introduce him, I would have thought, because it sounds like there's sort of interdimensional Earth things happening with this as well. So, because Crisis on Earth X basically involves, I think, some evil versions of some of the characters kind of invading the wedding. Okay. So it sounds like that could be quite good fun. But yeah, I'm quite looking forward to that. I mean, obviously they've got to try and up the game after they had the entire place invaded by aliens last season. So that's going to be kind of interesting, I think.
Yeah, and I think it'd be good if he was in Legends as well, because Legends is a show where you can keep some of the main core of the team, but you do need to change things up now and again.
Yeah,
which they did do last season. So
yeah, I think that could be good, and I think he's a great addition as well. I think he's really good.
Which episodes are the crossover ones this year?
I'm not sure. Off the top of my head, I think it was something like 7 or 8.
Last year it was episode 8.
Yeah, I think it's around about the same again.
Because they had like 7 episodes and they had the crossover, and then they used the 9th episode for like the mid-season finale.
Yeah, I think it's going to be around about the same again. I believe this time around Supergirl is going to be properly part of it. So it will be, because last time it was sort of a 3-parter, and now I think it's going to be a 4-parter.
Oliver won't basically tell her to go away, because that's kind of what he did last year.
Yeah.
And I was like, what are you doing? Yeah. This is so powerful and everything.
Yeah. So we'll see. But looking forward to that. That should be good. All the DC shows are coming back in October, I believe. I read somewhere earlier on. I think they. I mean, we kind of knew that anyway.
In the US, so it should be soon after that.
Yes, it will probably be towards the end of October because they tend to leave a couple of weeks when they first kick off. So it may be the week after. It may be that it ends up being towards the end of October, but we'll see. So that's all the news for this week. Next up, we have the interview. So the interview this week is with a composer. It's Jeremy Nathan Tizer, who is the composer for Raw Data, which is one of the best-selling VR games, I think, that's been released on various platforms. He's a composer for film and TV, but he's been really focused on the video game work recently, particularly the VR stuff. Like a lot of kids, he started off by playing the piano, but his mum noticed that he was a sort of this hyper kid that loved to tap on everything and started asking if he'd like to switch across onto drums. So he did, and that's where he kind of really found his passion. He studied rock, then sort of jazz and funk, and played in bands in schools and stuff. His big break came when he was in college, and he ended up scoring a VR project and making friends with Palmer Luckey and James Liff. If you don't know those names, Palmer is one of the founders of the Oculus VR system and sort of responsible for creating Oculus. And James is the chief creative officer for Servos, who are the company behind Raw Data. So, both of them went on to create these kind of, be part of this big VR thing. So we talk a lot about Raw Data and, how different it is composing music for things like VR. We also talk a little bit about how he ended up being on screen in the hit movie La La Land, which is just kind of a good story. So it's an interesting interview. It's about 20 minutes long. We'll see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. Hey, Jeremy, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Really should start off by talking a little bit about how you got into composing in the first place. So do you want to just explain that?
Yeah. I mean, like most of the composers in the industry, I've been in music since I was four.
Yeah.
And that was just studying as a kid, learning. I started on piano, moved to drum set, played in bands all through high school, like rock bands. And I played in the school's jazz band. We didn't have a marching band, so I didn't get to do that. And then my college, I went to Cal State Northridge. They didn't have a marching band either at the time. So I totally missed out on that whole thing. as a drummer, no less.
Yeah.
But I originally was a music business major and I was just bored because I'd been writing my own contracts for my own band since I was 14 or 15. And then when I was 16, I started booking shows locally in the San Fernando Valley for like touring metal bands and hardcore bands and punk bands. And so I was organizing concert tours to come to our local hole in the wall venues. So I've been doing all this stuff since I was 15, 16, and I was just bored out of my mind. And I found out about this film scoring program they had at Cal State Northridge that was, couldn't even have been 5 years old at the time.
Right.
Run by Elizabeth Sellers, who's still there. And she liked some of the stuff I had put together, some of the music I had written and arranged for my previous bands. And she said she'd give me a shot. So I found out that I had a knack for orchestra when I started taking the classes, and I got really into it. And then from there, I heard about this USC, the University of Southern California, had this scoring for motion picture and television program. And I was really intrigued by it because, Jerry Goldsmith used to teach there. Marco Beltrami went there. Steve Bernstein went there. Pete Anthony. All these legends went there. And then Chris Young, who's one of my favorite horror composers, one of my favorite composers in general, he teaches there. And I was like, I want to go study from him. So I worked my butt off and got in. And so I went there. And the year that I went there, Bruce Broughton came in and started teaching orchestration there, which was like, holy cow. So I'm getting all these legends everywhere. And it was just, it just kind of took off from there.
Well, that's a good start. So, you worked on kind of various different things, sort of short films and a few video games even early on as well. How did you really sort of start
to get into the video game side of things?
That actually started at USC. I'll never forget this. This is one of my favorite stories. So Gary Scheinman, the composer for BioShock, was our teacher for the video games music courses. He's wow. become one of my mentors and also one of my close friends now.
Yeah.
He had this idea, because that was his first year teaching there as well. And he had this idea of bringing the USC game students to our class and having them pitch to us for a composer, And then we would get an opportunity to demo for up to three games. And the student game makers would choose the composer whose demo they liked best, and that's who'd get the gig. So we get a little real world experience there.
Yeah.
And this was 6 years ago now. And wow, 6 years ago now. Okay. for our class, there was a couple of really solid games that everyone just lined up to go after the pitch was over. Everyone lined up to go sign up on the sheet and meet the game makers. And I saw this one VR game project that it was called Shade. And it was basically the pitch that was delivered was horrible. No one understood it except me. I picked up on three things. I picked up on virtual reality, Alien World, and Disney-esque.
Cool.
And like, yeah, so I anyone that knows Disney knows that that's going to be something really interesting. So I went up to talk to her about it. And I was like, let me get this straight. You can walk around freely in a virtual reality space on an alien world and you want it to be beautiful and fun.
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, that sounds about right. I'm like, all right, I'll sign up. And she goes, that's great. You know, I'm really happy you're going to sign up, but they said we could wait the whole 45 minutes. So I'm going to see if anyone else signs up too. I stood next to her for 45 minutes because I wanted that project and not a single other person showed up to sign up on them. So she was like, I guess there's no point in having you demo. So I got the job.
Oh, poor girl.
But what was interesting was, and this I didn't know yet, and this was 2011. This was like a full year before Oculus's Kickstarter even went live.
Right.
So I ended up meeting a lifelong friend who was also working on that named James Iliff, who is now the chief creative officer of Servios. Right. I also met a gentleman named Palmer Lucky, who was building the head mount displays for USC, which was the ones we were using.
Right.
And now look who those people are. But we were all at USC at the time. And that was pretty much how I got started. I also met my friend Chao Huang, who I believe works at Google now.
Right.
The one that gave me my first two mobile games.
Right. Okay, cool.
Yeah. So all of that came from this one project.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
so basically the connections you make. I mean, the big thing that you've been working on recently is, of course, Raw Data.
Yes.
This video game, which is a VR game. I haven't got a VR rig myself, but I have played a demo of this there's a big PC gaming expo that they do here every year. So I managed to get onto it when I was down there. So I have had a little bit of experience with it. And it's really fun. It's certainly there was a load of VR games there this year. And that was one of the ones that I remember sticking out to me. So do you want to just explain a little bit about what the game is before we get into the music side?
Yeah, sure. So the game takes place a few hundred years in the future. And imagine a world where the digital era never really fully took off, but you still had evolution in technology. So the idea being that this company, Eden Corp, formed to create artificial intelligence to try and help out humanity, make our lives easier with robots and stuff, right? Kind of like iRobot.
Yeah.
However, something's off. The human race is basically gone and the robots have taken over the world. So you join this syndicate group whose job is to go and break into the building and hack into their mainframe, steal all the raw data and extract it from the company, from their computer systems, so you can expose it to the world and kill off the company and try and end this robot overtaking.
Okay, so and it's kind of a shooter, basically, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're in this sort of VR 3D world. Essentially
it's a wave-based first person shooter with a tower defense vibe to it.
Right.
But it kind of, the game kind of evolved over time. And so the newest level to be announced and released was the Botanical Gardens, which is a more linear. That's the level that kind of defines the game.
Right.
And it's the heart of the story. So okay. It's more bloodline instead of just a standard wave shooter.
Right. Okay, cool. What's it like composing music for a VR game? Is it any different to composing for other sorts of projects?
I think so. I think the biggest difference is it's way more of a personal experience, right? You're putting on this intrusive headgear. Like, you have to actually put something on your face and hold on to these controllers and make sure you have enough room. And you physically become the character and you become the story. And because of that, the experience is different. And I think that actually helped me create something a little bit more special and unique with the music because of it. Because it was, I mean, I'd go in every 2 weeks to play the updates on the game without any music. And I would just say, how did that make me feel? And then I'd get to go home and write the music that level made me feel while I was playing it. And so it was just a very unique experience and a different way to work that oftentimes in the media world we're not offered the luxury to do. We don't have the time to do. Usually you just have to write as quickly as possible and just get it in the game, and you're sitting at home playing it all the time. But it wasn't that at all, so it was fun.
Yeah, that is a very different kind of way to working, because I've spoken to game composers before where, I mean, sometimes they're even working because, you know, the game's still in development. They're working to kind of pictures and storyboards and that sort of thing. So the fact that you can get your hands on it is sort of makes quite a big difference, I imagine.
Well, yes and no. I mean, I was also working the pictures and that kind of stuff. But the way, so I signed on to Raw Data about 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
None of the hardware was even available yet. And I had to go into their offices to play like once a month or every couple of weeks because it would be updated. And when I first signed on, they were still in the gray box mode. So right. There wasn't any visuals. There weren't any graphics. They had concept art, but I was basically playing the game. I would go in and play a gray box and see what it was, what style of game they were going for. And then we'd look at the pictures together. Me and James and I would look at the pictures together and go over the story and the concept. And then we'd figure out what kind of style we wanted the music. And that was for the original 10-minute demo that was released at the VR LA Winter Expo a year and a half ago.
Right, right.
So, you know, and then from that, our process for this game just kind of grew and evolved. And the problem with VR right now is that the headgear, and then you got it's like, it's so expensive. And then on top of that, you have to have a $1,500, $2,000 American dollars PC that's powerful enough to run such a big game like that. And then you have the space to play it, which we did it at our previous apartment. And only now, just like 2 days ago, I think the HTC Vive dropped down to $600 for the whole unit instead of $800. So everyone go get it and play Raw Data. but you know, it was you couldn't get the stuff. You couldn't, or the head mounts, couldn't afford to build the PC. And so I had to go to their offices every couple of weeks to play updates and talk with them.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, how do you, you've talked about sort of being in the game and how it feels is that sort of how you found the sound for the game overall?
A little bit. Our big thing was we wanted the score to really feel like the classic science fiction scores of the 70s and the 80s. You know, so we wanted it to kind of feel like Total Recall or Terminator or Star Wars, you know, Star Trek. We wanted it to like be able to hold its own against those, which for me was like, oh crap, what are you doing to me, man? Those, to me, that's as good as it gets. That's the top of the line. You can't get any higher than that in terms of science fiction quality. But so when he was like, yeah, we want like David Arnold, Jerry Goldsmith, you know, we want it to be able to, I'm like, God, man. but yeah. we, you know, we, We looked at our favorite movies as opposed to video games. And we said, if we could make our dream movie, but in a VR game, what would it be?
Yeah.
And so they pretty much let me pull out all the stops and kind of do whatever I felt was necessary. And they were very accommodating with it, with making sure that I had the tools that I needed to get the job done. And they were very open to just about everything I threw at them. It was crazy. You know, if I had... Like we sat down and like there's, so you have the data chamber level, right? Which is this is like this big, vast, empty space, kind of reminiscent. When I first played it, what it reminded me of was the scene in Empire Strikes Back when Luke Skywalker gets his hand cut off.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His father, that big open space with the bridgeways without railings on it.
Yeah.
That's what the data chamber was supposed to feel like. So I went with like this big, dark, brooding, low sounding, everything had to be dark and like that kind of vibe. And so they let me go record the blaster beam, the same thing, the same one used on Star Trek the Motion Picture, which was like, that was a nerd's dream come true for sure. And then the skyport level, which is at the top of the building where you're seeing storage containers being dropped off and flying drones, and you know, it was supposed to kind of feel like an urban jungle kind of thing. So we wanted to go with that vibe. And so, but with all the flying drones, I wanted to go with something a little more fast paced and heart pounding.
Yeah.
And then you have the Robo Labs, which is where they're actually making the robots that are coming to kill everybody. And so that one, you know, we kind of went a little more on the nose. We wanted a little more electric guitars and anvils and drums and, you know, a pulsing groove for that. And then you've got the Botanical Gardens, which was Japanese gardens inspired, mixed with a modern looking facility. So that one, they let me kind of tell more of a story, but there's a lot of taiko drums and various ethnic instruments. I got a Tuvan throat singer.
The notes I had said mixture of didgeridoos, throat singing, and traditional haka.
Yeah, all in the Botanical Gardens level.
Right. Okay. That's very cool. So, I mean, you're getting to, I suppose one of the nice things about something like a video game when you've got different levels is you get to very distinctly play with the sound as you go through each different level.
Yeah. Yeah, that was pretty much it. It was like every level kind of had to have its own feel and its own vibe. And, you know, we could tie them together with themes and melodies and whatnot and use like the blaster beam on some of the other levels as well, just to kind of tie it all together. But it was cool. I wanted to give each level its own set of characters.
Yeah.
So you kind of felt the story as it moved along.
Yeah. So when you're recording this stuff, how much are you using real instruments versus virtual instruments?
So the orchestra itself is all virtual, unfortunately, on this one.
Right.
Most of the percussion is virtual as well, with the exception being the industrial percussion that we recorded for the Skyport level, which was chains, oil drums, metallic objects, things of that nature, that like instead of using a snare drum, we put a chain on top of an oil drum and made it sound like a snare drum, but it had a more industrial vibe to it.
Cool.
So I'd say it's like a good split if you count the orchestra as one instrument.
Yeah. No, well, it's understandable. I mean, you know, VR, although this is done incredibly well as a VR game, it is still a fairly young technology.
Yeah.
So there's not like movie money floating around in this genre
right
at the moment. So it kind of makes sense. Plus, there's some incredible virtual instruments out there these days.
Yeah, seriously. And what was, you know, again, more so about this, what was really fascinating was that I got to write a good number of the score at my piano with just pencil and paper, and then go take it to my computer and mock it up. And
yeah,
so that way I was able to really tune and hone in my orchestration on it. And one of the things you learn in college is good orchestration is good orchestration. And it doesn't matter how bad your mock-up is. If you have good orchestration, your mock-up will sound pretty decent. So I really wanted to focus on that as best as I could, at least for most of the game. Once the game really expanded, I was about to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I noticed there are a couple of other like video games. You worked a little bit on Company of Heroes and on Dragon Age 2 as well, I noticed, were in your credits.
Yeah, I mean, I was an assistant on both of those. Company of Heroes was the movie version. I used to work for, my first job out of graduate school was assisting Freddie Veidman, who is known for Beware the Batman, Green Lantern animated series. He does a ton of horror films.
Right,
The guy's a machine. He's an incredible, incredible, incredible composer. And he's now Emmy winning. So congratulations to him. but that was one of my first jobs where it was more of a tech job out of there. And so I was bouncing stems and creating parts for the recording sessions for him. And I got to be very, very hands-on with all his stuff. And it was a lot of fun. With Dragon Age, I believe I was still at Cal State Northridge. I was getting ready to graduate. And Inon Zur is actually another one of my mentors. Right. But I've known him since I was like 3 or 4 years old. he used to play the organ at my synagogue. And he's the one that trained my brother, my older brother, to play the organ at Temple. My brother's now a cantor. And when I went to college to study composition, my brother was like, you should call Inon. That's what he does. And I was like, oh yeah, he did Digimon, didn't he? And my brother was like, dude, he's like one of the top game composers. I'm like, really? So I called him. I go over to his monster house in Encino, a beautiful custom studio over there. I didn't even know. I remember when he lived in a smaller home in Encino and was writing in his garage doing Power Rangers when I was a kid. And I remember all that. And so, you know, we talked and he was gracious enough to kind of let me be a runner for him for a couple of projects and let me come to some sessions and drop off hard drives and pick up clients from the airport to bring to his studio. Like Idan Reichel, the Israeli singer, I got to go pick him up from his hotel in Santa Monica. Nice. And bring him to the known studio in Encino. And so he was really, really gracious enough to offer me those opportunities early on so I could really watch the process for writing game music.
Yeah, it's all a great grounding for kind of getting where you are now, I guess. So.
Yeah.
You've also got an actor credit on there, which we should talk about, which is for La La Land.
So, yeah.
but so you popped up in one of the scenes in La La Land. Do you want to just talk about that?
Yeah, I'm in the opening scene on the freeway. When the blue truck pops open, there's four musicians in there, one of which is kind of hidden in the back because of the lighting, but there's a marching bass drum that looks like it's floating in the air. That's me hitting it.
Awesome. So yeah, how did you end up on that?
So that was a union gig. Peter Rotter, my union contractor out here, another dear friend as well. He's the guy in charge of hiring musicians for the orchestras as well as for on-camera music work.
Right.
So he's got my headshot and every now and then he'll send out my picture along with a bunch of other young drummers. And it's like a casting call and they'll look at the pictures of people and say, okay, I want this guy for this scene, this guy for that scene. One of my closest friends in the world, Sam Webster, is actually the drummer in the 80s band at the pool party. So yeah, if you watch him smiling and being a goober, it's really fun to watch that guy, Sam Webster. But so Peter's office emailed me and said, we've got this shoot. Make sure to save these 2 days if you're interested. I'm like, ah, why not? I'll do it. Call time is 4 a.m. Oh, great. So,
man.
Okay, why not? I could use the money. We didn't even know the movie was under one of those production titles.
Right, yeah.
I don't
remember
what it was, but it wasn't La La Land. So I didn't even know what the movie was called at the time. But they sent us sheet music. And they sent us a little clip of the score for the section we were going to be dancing and playing our instrument to, and to prepare. And then we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into.
No, you end up on one of the biggest movies to come out of, well, certainly the biggest musical to come out of Hollywood in a very long time. So, yeah, amazing.
Yeah, it was 105 degrees that day. And we were literally on top of a freeway. They actually shut down a freeway interchange for us to shoot on.
Well, traffic's so bad in LA, not like anybody's going to notice.
Oh, I know. It was so funny. funny. There was actually traffic on the freeway below us from people stopping to look, because there, you know, you had 50 dancers jumping on cars and stuff, and a big camera crew. And yeah, it's LA, people are used to it, but it's still, when you see a choreographed dance number on top of a freeway, you're gonna stop and go, "What the hell is going on up there?"
That's nuts. Oh dear. A few final questions for you.
Sure.
First of all, what are you doing next?
Right now I've got a feature film coming up called Chameleon.
Cool.
Written and directed by my good friend Marcus Mazzell. He did Actor for Hire, another one of the features I did.
Yeah.
This is more of a crime thriller, so it'd be nice to kind of change gears for a little bit. I've got a documentary miniseries coming up for another director. And I've got a pilot that I'm working on that I'm actually involved in the production phase of it as well, and the creation of it.
Oh, cool.
I don't want to say much more than that right now, but that's going to be a good one.
Cool.
And yeah, then I have some more VR meetings coming up. I've been talking with a couple companies doing some of their things. Nothing I can really say just yet. You know, NDA is in the tech world.
Yes, yeah, I know. I know. But, it's always the same with games people. They can never tell you anything.
Yeah, I know. What are you working on? Some things.
Yeah, stuff. I can't. There's a sort of red dot appears on their forehead. So, yeah, last two questions, which you always ask people, because we cover a lot of TV shows on the on the site. So first question is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
Oh, man. Anything Marvel on Netflix. I'm obsessed with what they've done with that. I thought that, I know a lot of people are hating on it, but I thought The Defenders was killer.
Yeah.
I loved it. I binged that thing in a day and a half. It was so good.
Yep. Me too. Did exactly the same thing.
Other than that, I haven't really had time to keep up with too many shows, but Doctor Who's been probably my favorite show. I tuned into the reboot of that one, I want to say in like 2007. It came back in 2005, right?
That sounds right. Yes.
Okay. I came back into it 2 years after it was rebooted. If it was either 2005 or 2009, whatever it was, I joined back into that 2 years after it came out, and I've been hooked on it ever since.
It's a really good series. I'm kind of sad to see Peter Capaldi go. He's been good.
I know. So I do miss the David Tennant days.
The
fast-paced style of the show.
Yes, but it's going to be interesting to see how the new female Doctor comes across.
I'm excited. That I think it's about time. First of all, I know there are people are saying that, but I think it's just going to be a good change of pace with everything.
Yeah, I mean, I've said all along, I don't care whether the Doctor's male or female, as long as it's good. That's all I really care about.
Yeah.
So and the pace as well. It would be good to have, like you say, something a bit faster paced would be nice as well. And finally, if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Star Trek. Star Trek.
Yeah,
I'm a Trek nerd for sure. I was born in 87. So I grew up, I'm part of the TNG Voyager DS9 demographic or generation. So, you know, I grew up on that. I make it a point at least once a year to rewatch Voyager and Deep Space Nine. They're just, you know, they're part of my life, and it would be an honor to be a part of that.
Awesome. So looking forward to the new series as well of that coming up.
Yeah. We've got Jeff Russo. He's killer composer and a great person, and his whole team is amazing. I'm very excited to hear what they come up with.
Yeah, I've interviewed Jeff a number of times. He's a very nice guy. So I'm going to have to try and get him back on I think we are getting him back on when Star Trek comes out. So
okay, I'll be sure to listen for it.
That should be good. So keep an ear out. I shall let you get back to your day. Thank you for coming on and spending a little bit of time talking through your work and stuff. It's been cool.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Jeremy. Hope you enjoyed that. Raw Data's available on Steam. I'm not sure whether it's on other platforms, actually. I didn't check, but I know it's certainly based on Steam for Oculus as well, so you can go and get that. Now we've got some highlights for next week on TV.
So highlights for next week. First show up is one that I'm pretty sure me and Matt are both probably looking forward to. Designated Survivor returns for its second season. That's on the 28th of September on Netflix.
I'm kind of half a season behind, though.
Oh, terrible. So
I keep seeing it on my list, but then...
You need to go back to it.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's because the season's long.
Yeah, it is. It is a long season.
That's been bugging me for ages. Like, I should keep watching. I liked the show. There's nothing wrong with the show. It just... One of the things that just sort of slipped away, and I'm like, I should be watching this, really. I'm such a big Kiefer fan, and I did like it. So, I've got a lot of it to watch.
Yes, you need to go back to that. You've got until the 28th of September to go and binge watch the rest.
I don't think that's going to happen.
So there's that. There's Law & Order True Crime, which is this anthology version of Law & Order. Basically, it's a true crime series that they happen to have stuck the Law & Order tag onto the front of, because it bears no relation to any other Law & Order thing. So this stars Eddie Falco, who you'll know from Nurse Jackie and Sopranos. It's based on the Menendez brothers' murders this first season. It's going to be this anthology thing. So it's sort of People versus OJ kind of idea to it. Some early reviews have come in, don't kind of rate it that highly, but I don't know, we'll see. It's on Sky Living, that's coming on the 28th as well, that's at 9 p.m. Then we've got Room 104, which is coming for its first season to Sky Atlantic. This isn't a new version of Room 101, but it's a HBO anthology comedy series about people that pass through Room 104 of an American motel. So it's basically the room is the connecting factor, and the people, they've sort of different people that come into the room every day. That looks like it could be kind of interesting. It's coming on the 28th of September at 10:30. So all of these have
is
been
like
on the
a horror series or something.
No.
It's in the room or something.
No, I think it's about, you know. So it might be a couple in the middle of an argument, or it could be a single guy calling hookers, or I don't know. I mean, I have no idea what the, you know. But it's not a horror thing. I don't think it's a comedy series just about events that happen to be set in a hotel room. I think that's the basic idea. Then we've got Curb Your Enthusiasm, which returns after a 5-year break for its 9th season. That's coming to Sky Atlantic on the 2nd of October at 10 p.m. So I know a lot of people are looking for that coming back.
That's some excitement, yeah.
Yes.
I've not seen it myself.
I think I've seen the odd episode, and it has. I mean, it is very, very funny, but, you know, it was, by the time I caught it, it was quite late into that run, and I'm not going to go back and watch like 8 seasons of something if I can help it. So I might go and watch some episodes of this, because I do like Larry David. He is very funny. Lucifer returns for its 3rd season on the 3rd of October, which sees Tom Ellis back as Lucifer. I love this series. It's fantastic. Might not bear a huge amount of resemblance to the comic book, but I think they've done an amazing job with the TV show. And Tom Ellis is so watchable. It's just very, very funny. So that I'm looking forward to. And then Z Nation returns for its 4th season on Pick TV on the 3rd of October at 10 p.m. That is back, which is the slightly sillier
the silly
show.
The silly zombie show. Yeah,
the sillier zombie show, which I rather enjoy.
You have like zombies that form a tire, roll down a street that continue to pick up other zombies, all that sort of thing. Yeah.
Yes, they had the Liberty Bell, which bounced off the back of a truck and squashed loads of zombies. And yeah, it's
that
was quite early on. I'm sure it was the Liberty Bell that they, I can't remember. Yes, okay. I'm sure it was, but that was quite early on. But yes, there's all sorts of silly, bizarre things that happen in that. So it's kind of drama, but with a slightly sort of tongue-in-cheek element to it. But yeah, really enjoyable. Coming to Pick TV, that's on the 3rd of October at 10 p.m. That's Z Nation. So I believe that's everything for this week, unless you've got anything else you want to put in, Matt.
I don't want to, like, you know, bring up old things or whatever with Gotham, but season 4 has started in the US, and I've continued to hear good things. So I hope that something happens soon.
Yeah.
With that,
my feeling is, now I can't say really too much without getting people into trouble, but yeah, I mean, Channel 5 do have the rights. They have bought season 3. They're struggling to air it at the moment. They are hopeful that they will air it some point in the autumn for season 3, but my personal feeling is, given the problems they've had with season 3, I doubt they will pick up season four.
Okay.
Which will put it back onto the open market and need somebody else to pick it up. Now, Netflix would seem like the obvious place for that because they are technically premiering season three. Whether they want to do that and put it out weekly, I don't know. They will obviously get it eventually because it will come on to them naturally, but that will be next year, which will be annoying because we don't have to wait a year for
it. Before season five, isn't
it? So
season four.
That would be kind of annoying if we have to wait a year for it. Hopefully that won't be the case. Season four is pretty much in limbo right now, I think. I mean, Channel 5 officially haven't said they're not picking it up. My gut feeling is they won't, but that is my opinion, not like any insider knowledge or anything. That's my opinion on it. But yeah, my feeling is that Gotham may be looking for a new home. Whether that would be Netflix or possibly Fox, I guess, because Fox do own it. So that would be a possibility, but we'll see. We'll see what happens.
The only reason I'm bringing it up is because season four just started again. And
people are asking about it.
I watched the season three finale, and without spoiling too much, they fixed something that was really annoying me with the show. They fixed it, and I watched the season four trailer, and it looks like it's going in a direction that I actually am happy with. I like the previous seasons and stuff, and I didn't watch all of season three, but I'm looking forward to season four.
I'm just very happy they've said Fish Mooney isn't coming back. So
yeah, me too. As well as from what I've seen, everyone on the internet is happy about that.
I really didn't like that character. Nothing against the actress. I think the actress is fabulous. I just hated that character. So with all that out of the way, if you want to find the latest news and air date information throughout the week, you can go to the website at geektown.co.uk for us. Find Matt at entertainmenttalk.org as well. You can get in touch with our questions and comments by emailing us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. You can leave a message on the website post. You can find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That's everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.